go.
Good. Okay. So this is the National 9/11 Truth Teleconference for 7/31/13. Welcome, everybody. First thing we always do is confirm the minutes from the previous meeting that were circulated. Does anybody have any objection to that?
No.
Hearing none, we'll take the minutes as circulated by Craig as approved.
Ken?
Yeah, Craig, go ahead.
Since we just started the recording, should I read that roll just so that it's on the recording?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. Thank you, Craig.
Okay, so I have Barry Zwicker, Ned Delaney, Barbara Honegger, Adam Ruff, Adam Syed, Paul Zaremka, James Hufford, Lorenzo Fine, Craig McKee, Mark DeSeal, Dwayne Deeps, Shelton Langford, Mike Booth. Did I miss anyone?
Okay.
Okay, if not.
Now we move on to approving the draft agenda. Does anybody have any amendment for the draft agenda? It's circulated. Okay. Well, I don't hear any requests for new items, so we will therefore take the draft agenda as our agenda for this evening as proceeds. The first item on the agenda is our feature presentation for tonight, a campaign for an independent study to conclusively confirm or refute the 2009 paper by Herrick et al. That will be Mark Bassel. Is that the correct pronunciation, Mark? Mark Bassel?
Basile or Basile.
Mark? Mark?
Yes, no, it's Basile or Basile.
Basile, I'm sorry. Okay, Mark Basile. Okay, and I'll let him get us acquainted with the design of the study and whatever else he wishes to inform us about, and then we'll open it up for questions. Go ahead, Mark. Thank you very much for being here.
All right. So basically, I guess the first thing I'd say is just even in the line item description, it talks about to conclusively confirm or refute the 2009 paper. I'm not really looking to conclusively confirm or refute. I'm really just looking to be a confirmatory paper in most part. I've seen what I've seen in the dust samples that I've dealt with so far, and I don't really plan on refuting anything because I know what I've seen, and it's really just a matter of whether the samples are still active when I actually test them and so on. But, you know, the whole thing of refuting isn't really where I'm at here. I don't think it's even something that's on the table. But I am going to tell what I find, and that will be what I find. And but that's really just a minor point here. The other things I guess I'd want to say is, you know, I've read a lot of stuff. People have, John Michael in particular, and Rick Shattuck, put a lot of work into trying to get this thing moved forward. It originally started with Shane Geiger way back, and I thought it was a good idea to basically get some independent labs to, you know, look at some samples and, you know, just look at the results that they come up with. I mean, that's in essence what it's all about. So what I'm really trying to do is, in essence, confirm and then advance what's already been published. What I'm looking for really is just support. I'm not looking for money from anybody, because if I get money from somebody, it creates, if not in essence reality, at least the illusion to some people of a lack of independence and liberty. You know, and I'd use the analogs of basically like tobacco studies that funded, you know, the things, and, well, hey, the researchers came up with what they were looking for. Government-funded studies, they find what they're looking for, and otherwise it doesn't really get published. I'm looking for support, but I'm not really looking for money from people. I want independence and the liberty to do things the way I think they need to be done. So what I've basically asked for at this point is about $5,000. Or I think it's exactly $5,000. And I think that's an appropriate amount to basically get us some answers that can confirm what's already been put out there. if that happens and I see that people are really willing to contribute, I'd like to actually get about $10,000 is more where my original proposal started. And I think that can basically confirm and then actually move the science a little bit more forward, if you will. So really all I'm looking for is just endorsements from people to, you know, help this project along. I'm not going to take any money from this for my personal expenses for travel or really anything. Every penny will be accounted for, and I've seen some questions raised about, like, well, if any funds are left over, where's that money going to go? And I would basically contribute any funds that were left over, although I'll state, you know, straightforward that I think the only monies that will be left over would basically be the difference between me doing some additional analytical work that needed to be done and not doing that work. So it's only going to be a few hundred dollars that doesn't get spent, conceivably. But I would forward it to another organization that has to do with 9/11, whether it's architects and engineers or, you know, one of these charity organizations that sends money to people that, you know, have been harmed by the event. And but I'm really not looking for anything individually. So really I'm just looking to do a confirmation study and get some help. I mean, if you want to get into technical details about what I, you know, what it is that I want to do, I basically want to replicate the work that's been done as far as SEM work, DSC, that's the calorimetric work that shows the exotherm from the nanothermite, analyzing the residues from the reactions, taking it a little bit further, doing some Auger work, which can basically determine if there's elemental aluminum present, or maybe doing some transmission electron microscope work, which again can confirm elemental aluminum, those types of works, as well as GC work at looking at the gas reaction products that come off from this thing, that type of work.
Okay, before we open up to other comments and questions, can you give a little bit of your background for the benefit of people who don't know you, Mark?
Sure. Yeah, I'm a chemical engineer by education. I went to WPI. I got a Bachelor of Science from them. And my professional career, though, has basically stemmed even from before I finished my BS. I was already working in industry. And I've worked for, oh, God, what is it? I don't know. It's got to be close to 30 years. So I got my BS in 85, and I was working a couple years before that in industry. But a lot of what I do, or what I do right now, actually, is I design analytical instrumentation, optically based, for instance, fluorescence detectors, UV absorbance detectors, visible light absorbance detectors, refractive index detectors. I've worked on a number of different things, which I can't really get into the details because of, call it trade secrets or whatever you want, but I can't talk about them. And but I basically am a chemical engineer. I understand a lot of chemistry. I deal in, my early career really dealt with a lot of metallurgy because of the company that I was working for. So I've done a lot of metallurgy, a lot of various analytical work, which doesn't involve metallurgy, but just basic analysis of water. The company that I work for is an analytical instrumentation company, and I basically work within the group building new detectors. I basically, you know, help design the basic things, then do what are called proof of principle experiments. You know, you can sit down and design something, and then you should, if you really understand it, basically be able to say what the instrument will be able to do when you actually turn it on. And then I basically do experiments to show that it does what we say it's going to do. And,
okay. All right. I think that's
what I think.
Great. But your plan is to publish this, the results of your study, if you're successful in getting the funding for it, right?
Yes. In one way or another, this information will get into the public domain, whether it's through a mainstream journal, whether it's the Journal of 9/11 Studies, or whether it has to be me standing there and reading something into a YouTube video. One way or another, this information will get into the public domain. That's paramount, actually.
Okay. I imagine there are a number of people with questions aside from myself, so let's make a quick stack here, and then we'll go ahead with that. Who would like
Barb
to...
Barb Moniger has a question.
Barb, who else? Barb, Dwayne. Okay, Dwayne, who else? Okay, then Barb, Dwayne, and then myself. Go ahead, Barb.
Okay, actually I have three questions that probably everybody has. What is the source of your dust samples, and what is the chain of custody or provenance of those, number one? And number two, can you include checking for evidence of nuclear event byproducts per Prager's work and Dr. Ed Spencer and others like that?
Okay, well, the sources of my dust at this point are I have one sample in common with work of Carrot and Jones and all, and that's a sample from Jeanette McKinley. My other samples have come from two from individuals and then one from an organization. I can't give their names because they haven't given me clearance to give their names or anything, but basically that's where they come from.
Is the Jeanette McKinley sample from Stephen Jones?
No, it was sent to me directly from Jeanette. I have her correspondence indicating such.
Okay, well, that's wonderful.
This is James Hufford. I'd like to get on the stack, too.
Okay, James, I'll put you right behind me.
Let me just address her other two questions. So that addresses the sources. Chain of custody. Again, I have, what do I have actually? From Jeanette, I have correspondence. From one of the individuals, they actually made some photographic records. When I took a sample from them, I really just noted in my notebooks what had transpired. And I did that with all of my samples. One of them came from a museum, which hasn't given me authorization to use the museum's name, so, you know, I can't really say who they are at this point, but it was a museum. And,
but presumably when you publish the results, you'd mention the sources.
Well, I, you know, will do whatever I have to get around it. I mean, I'm not going to exclude the sample simply because somebody doesn't want me to use their name. I'll present the data, and people can take it for what they do. Because with any, I look at it this way, you know, that I'm going to put out what I'm going to put out, and people can call me a liar, or people can believe me, and that's up to them. I'm just going to tell them what I found. And, you know, prosperity and the future can do with it what they will, but I'm going to put the information out there. And as far as the nuclear thing goes, I think that I'll have to look into that. And I have actually been curious to explore this whole regime a little bit more because I personally don't give it a lot of credence, but I, on the other hand, do not dismiss anything at this point in time. And,
well, what's important is to know that it's based upon the actual published report of dust analysis by the USGS and the Department of Energy. So you need to get those reports and go from there, and you don't have to take Prager's word for it. But if you give your email here sometime on the call, I'll send you those links.
Okay. No, but what I was getting at is I think that some of the techniques that I'll be using here would actually expose if there were various isotopes there. It's just at what level they were going to expose it. So
at least you won't not look for them.
Oh, no. I would look for anything that was there.
Okay, good.
Okay, thanks, Barb. Dwayne, you were next on the stack.
Yeah. So my question is, have you read T. Mark Hightower's blog on this subject?
I am not sure by name that I have. Can you?
Okay, I suggest
what
you
the
read it.
Was?
T as in Tom, Mark Hightower. And the particular issue is the variability between samples, between the different chips of the different dust samples.
Yeah.
in terms of energy per mass, he found to be extremely high. And I just would say, take precautions that you don't repeat that.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what you mean, but are you talking about like within given red chips?
Yes.
Well, I expect actually a lot of variability.
Well, this is extremely high. Extremely high.
Especially with passing time. I really don't know what the chemistry is of what's going on inside these chips completely over time. So, you know.
Sure.
I think that just, you know, can add to it. It might have been some to begin with. And I think there's a lot of physical explanations for why there could be a lot of variability, too. So.
Okay, I'll just leave it at that.
Thanks, Wayne. I have two questions for you. This is Ken. I have two questions for you, Mark. The first one has to do with your use of the term advanced. So the first question I have is, what do you mean by advancing it? How would you hope to be able to advance the work up here at all?
Well, basically what I'm talking about there is, for instance, you know, they did great work. They really showed a lot of convincing evidence that something's amiss, if you will, here. But, for instance, they didn't show actually that there was elemental aluminum within the basic matrix of the chips themselves. That would be an advancement to show conclusively that there was elemental aluminum in there. Because elemental aluminum doesn't really exist in nature. Okay, it's something that nature abhors because it's simply so reactive. Another example would be that, okay, they got these chips to react in a DSC, but they didn't actually take the off-gas products and analyze those in any way. That would be another example of an advancement. It's just adding to the information base, that's all.
Okay. And I have two more questions. One has to do with the expenses. Can you just give us a brief overview of what expenses you expect will be entailed in this study?
Well, I submitted something a couple of times, actually, now to the A&E group, and I can be more than happy to send it to you guys again. But basically, some of the analytical techniques that I'm looking to use, like FTIR, Fourier transform infrared, or even Raman spectroscopy, I think is actually a little bit more useful. It does the same type of thing, but it can be a little bit less destructive. Those types of analysis, you know, for a given sample can be $250 to $400 a piece. You know, to get somebody to look at something in a SAM with energy dispersive X-ray analysis to give you the elemental composition of the material that you're looking at, you know, again, it's $250 a sample, or ESCA and Auger type work can be, you know, $500 an hour, those types of things. So, you know, looking at several samples and spending an hour with each one, you know, it adds up quickly.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. The only other thing I wanted to ask you was about the question of independence, because I'm hearing you say on the call that your purpose is to confirm, which of course, you know, those of us on the call hope, well, I'm sure we all would agree that we hope that's the end result of your work. However, what would you say to somebody who says, well, yeah, but you know, you said from the beginning that you just wanted to confirm it, so you were biased in your approach. What would you say to that?
Well, what I'm going to say is that, you know, I'm going to run analysis and I'm going to put those results out. And the main thing that I'm worried about is the DSC work, and I'm really just worried that the chips over 10 years have changed.
Yeah.
They may not ignite, you know. So I'm going to put out whatever I find. And I think that in and of itself is worthy of whatever it is, because, you know, I'm just a scientist. You know, that's all I do every day. I basically go into a lab and I watch what empirically happens around me and I try to understand it. And just because something doesn't work the way you expected it to doesn't mean that you're not learning from it, and that, you know, it's just you need to understand exactly why, say, for instance, the chip didn't ignite. Maybe it's because, well, the aluminum sits there for 6 years in a matrix, and it changes, and it isn't aluminum anymore. You know, so I think that I'm going to do my work, but the thing that I've said before publicly in some of my videos and whatnot is that we need a lot more people doing this. And so really all I'm trying to do is put another stake in the ground to get a few people to open their eyes to say, you know, maybe I should take a leap of faith here and go do something, you know, rather than just poo-pooing. So.
Right, or maybe I should throw my iron in the fire too. Right. Okay, thank you very much. And then, James, you were next on the stack.
Yes, well, first of all, I'm relieved to hear that you are going to let the chips fall where they may.
Oh, no, you didn't say that.
Sorry. But
I'm going to report what I heard.
Yeah. Okay. But my question
doesn't mean anything necessarily. You need to understand the physics behind what's happening.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know what I've seen in samples so far.
Yeah, I understand. It would be hard for any informed person to come in completely unbiased. I mean, that would be a little too much to ask probably at this point. But my question is, have you or will you anticipate whatever will be the likely substantive criticisms of your work and your conclusions, and be prepared to stick around and answer those criticisms?
Sure. If I put it out there, I'm going to answer to it.
Well, that isn't exactly what happened with Herrett and Jones. They weren't going to answer anybody that hadn't published in a vetted journal, and a lot of the criticism was sort of left unanswered.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm not going to spend the next 10 years of my life answering every person
right.
that comes at me, but yeah, I will respond and answer certain questions that I think are valid and pertinent and. I have no problem with that.
I think that'll be very helpful.
Lorenzo Stack, please.
Okay. Lorenzo, you're up.
Okay, Mark. Your comments about elemental aluminum and having it suddenly disappear into its oxides. I'm just kind of curious, if you are to find elemental aluminum, then whoever produced the stuff did a fair amount of homework in order to isolate this aluminum from oxygen.
Yeah, to actually get it to be what it is inside there, yes. They did a very large amount of work, actually, I think.
And that's all I had to say was that commentary.
Thanks, Lorenzo. Would anybody else like to make a comment or ask a question? Well, then I guess we have, it's time to thank our special guest tonight, Mark Basile. Also to remind you again what kind of support it is that you're looking for from us or from anyone at this point, Mark, so that we can note that in the minutes.
What I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Really just support. As simple statements of, and I think there's something that I need to do too, and I've been asked actually by John Michael so far to do a couple of things along that lines, but basically what I see me needing to do is put together a short statement, because I like to be brief, okay? And concise. I don't like going on and on and on. And I know John Michael's put together, a huge amount of information backing why this should be done and so on. But, I tend more towards the side of brevity, but basically saying that this is really me. This is what I really want to do. And, you know, explaining to a degree, I'm not going to benefit from this in any way. My personal time and travel and so on will be covered by myself. I'm really just looking to cover lab expenses. But basically put together a statement myself saying that I back this whole effort, okay, which I haven't really done up to this point. And then really just looking for your organizations to also say, we also back it. That's really all. In just some very concise and simple manner to say, you know, support this. We want to see the work done. And, you know, that's all. That's all I'm really
Did your, does your website has a donation page on it, right, or donation option, right?
Yes, it does. I think there's actually two of them that still exist, though. One of them seems to go still towards the fund organization. I think it's called Aetna. It's like A-E-N-T-A or something to that effect that Rick Shattuck is involved with. And then there's some of the donations that go to my personal PayPal account, which are marked as donations. So I have a clear, because I use my PayPal for other stuff, too. But all my donations are clearly marked as donations, and all of that is being tracked. The information is actually being sent to Rick on like a semi-monthly basis so that he can update things on the website and so on as to where we're at.
Right. Are you also keeping track of endorsements on the website? Is there a way for you to list those so that people are aware of how much support you're gathering in the I Love and Truth movement?
I'm not aware that there is one, but I'm sure that that would be a simple thing for, to be added. You know, just
yeah, I think that would be probably useful too, I would think. Okay, so would you like the 9/11 Truth teleconference to consider next month an endorsement of your project?
Yes, I would.
Okay, then we'll put that on the agenda for next month so people have notice, and we'll let you know it. If you'd like to join us again for the discussion, of course, you're always welcome.
Okay. Yeah, at this point, I think we've raised about $1,500 of the 5K that I'm looking for. So we're almost a third of the way there. And with the funds that exist, I can actually begin to do some work. But what I'm going to actually start with is primer samples and basically proving that primer samples cannot do what the nanothermite does. That's where I was going to basically start with the work.
Is primer what the other one said it was, the people that claimed
it? Oh, yeah, it was Millette and...
Millette, yeah. Great. Excellent. I was going to ask you about that. That's excellent. Cool. Anything else that anybody wants to say before we thank Mark for the last time here?
Give us your email address, please. I'll send you those tonight.
Sure. It's really just my name, Mark, M-A-R-K, dot, Basile. BASILE at Waters, waters.com. That's the company I work at.
Okay, thank you.
You make excellent analytical equipment. Check us out.
Thanks.
This is Greg. Am I noting anything in the minutes this month in terms of website or anything specific that you want?
Yeah, really. We definitely would. Which is the primary website for donations and where people can get more information, Mark?
Pardon?
Which is the primary website on which people can get make donations and get information about the project?
You know, I'm not even sure. Actually, I can get back to you tomorrow.
Would you send that information?
It's something like my name with markbasile.org or, you know, whatever, but these guys have really set it up, and I'm not exactly sure even what the website is.
We'll get the information from them and let us know, and we'll make sure it goes into the minutes, okay?
Okay. And this is who's speaking?
Well, this is Ken Freeland, but you could send it to either me or to Craig, either one. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Do you have my email address?
Right?
Well, I'll facilitate it, right?
All right.
I'll just send you an email so that you to remind you about this, and then just send me information back, okay?
Yep, sounds good. Yeah.
Okay.
Send me your.
Thanks again, Mark. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Our next item on the agenda is topical discussion, strengths and weaknesses of the upcoming 9/11 Advancing Truth Telecom Fair conference in D.C. Paul, you put this item on the agenda, so do you want to get us started?
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to open up a discussion of it. That was my intention, and I want to ask if I don't. Dwayne doesn't mind. I would like to ask Dwayne, in so many words, what's he's up to. I mean, I don't understand what his position currently is on the Pentagon event. I thought he had a 100% endorsement of the CIT position, so there must be some change. So I would kind of like to know what the motivation for the change is and where he stands now, if he doesn't mind. I mean, doesn't mind explaining that. If he does, that's fine. I also have a little resolution to make, but that would be later.
Okay. Dwayne, are you up to elaborating a little bit on where you're coming from?
Well, yeah, I can basically maybe comment on what's changed, which has caused me to kind of deviate from what I thought earlier. One of the important things, I think, is a analysis of the planes, 767s, at the World Trade Center by Aidan Monahan. He's got a book out on it, which I think is quite good. And what he does is he goes through the changes that occurred that, first of all, it opened up the military-grade GPS to all users, all civil users, in a couple of years prior to 9/11. And what that did is it increased the accuracy of GPS at least by an order of magnitude, if not more, which allowed very precise guidance and autopilots and things of that sort in commercial airplanes. And Boeing actually then had their vendors, Rockwell Collins and I'm not sure what the other one, different boxes that provide that function, took advantage of that. So this all happened in the year or two before 9/11, where these boxes, electronic boxes, were developed and tested, checked out. Actually, NASA performed precise tests on them in flight so that the capability existed to do very precise guidance functions. And the GPS, it's actually called augmented GPS because it includes a signal from a very precisely known ground position in different areas, one would be in New York, to correct the signal from the GPS satellite systems. So the accuracy just became kind of phenomenal. And the equipment was developed, and 767s and 757s have the same systems. They're basically the same airplane design, except one is a narrow body and one's a wide body. So he did all of his studies, he being Aidan, on the 767 using the video records of the second plane from a lot of different angles because there's a lot of different videos. And he kind of incorporated all that into an overall, we'll call it a world model of lower Manhattan, so that he could precisely know where the airplane was going. And he found that it was a precise constant bank turn up until the last 2.5 seconds. And even if, and it would have struck the tower, second tower, if there had been no correction. But there was a final correction abruptly 2.5 seconds before that also hit the tower. I mean, it was too late to really make a difference. So this precise constant bank turn was provided probably by that guidance system, because the guidance system would allow that kind of thing just to be entered into the pilot, which can be done from a ground facility. So the capability basically was there, checked out for 767s. That tells me that it's highly likely that a 757 was probably used the same technique, because it's probably the same planners, the same team that did the airplanes. And I basically, that's new information to me. But it tells me that there's a strong likelihood that there was actually a 757 flown using that same process, doing whatever it was doing at the Pentagon. So I think that's a big difference in kind of what probably happened. And I'll just add one other thing, is that although I'm very strongly convinced of the north of Sitco path by CIT and all of their interviews of people there, I don't take it as absolutely proven. I leave a small possibility that maybe something else is going on, whereas CIT makes it as proven. They take everything as proven based on that, and I don't do that. And that, if I'll go to the third thing, is I really look at the north path as north path with overflight. That is the event, north path with overflight. And I think that the evidence on overflight is quite weak. I've always thought it was quite weak, even early on, even when I did the show for Jesse Ventura. I felt very uncomfortable about the overflight part of that whole thing, and I still feel uneasy about that. So, and if I go back to maybe the possibility that maybe the north of Sitco isn't a proven thing, maybe there's a 1% chance that the planners of this whole thing actually wanted to insert some confusion, some spurious information that may cause confusion. And so I wouldn't rule out the possibility that they had some handful of individuals scattered along the north path to falsely report something that they didn't really see. So I really don't think that happened, but I give it a 1% chance. And with that 1% chance, I conclude overall that the other things add up to a 757 going more along the official path. I don't think it hit the telephone poles. I think it would have flown over them. I think those poles would have been knocked down by a deceptive thing in advance. So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Dwayne. Okay, well, the topic is the strengths and weaknesses of the conference. I think we have Barbara is on the call, too, and I know that she's part of that same Pentagon dialogue. And do we know yet who the third speaker is going to be? Has that been person been named?
You mean representing the SIT position? We don't know yet. Matt Sullivan is the one. By the way, can you hear me? Am I back off mute now?
Yeah, you're back on. You're back on. What's your name?
Okay. I'm out of the bank. I had fraudulent activity on my bank card, so I'm out of the bank. Anyway, Matt Sullivan is the point person on that, and he is trying to get someone to take the SIT position. It's been phenomenally difficult to get someone willing to take the SIT position at the conference.
Okay. All right. Well, does anybody else wish to join this discussion. It's an open discussion on the topic, so who would like to be on the stack?
Well, I would, seeing as I'm on the organizing committee and also speak for twice.
Barb,
Wayne and I are both. I think of all of it on the call, Dwayne and I are speaking at the conference.
Okay, I'll put you first on the stack. Barb, who else would like to speak?
Ned Delaney.
Ned, who else?
Yeah.
James Hufford.
James, who else?
Lorenzo.
Lorenzo, who else?
No, Adam Ruff.
Adam Ruff, who else?
Adam Syed,
who else?
Paul Blankford.
Paul?
Yep.
Who else besides Paul?
Greg and
Shelton, did you say your name?
I said it about three times, yes.
I'm sorry, I have trouble hearing you over the others. I'll note it.
Big crack.
Who else? Yeah, I'm telling you. Who else?
Barry Zwicker.
Barry, and who else?
Did you get Craig McKee on there?
Nope, didn't Craig. I got you now. Who else?
Okay.
Why don't All we right, just well, ask who doesn't want to speak?
Really? Yeah, let's go down the roll call here. Okay, well, Barb, you get to go first. You're certainly one of the featured presenters, so go ahead and tell us what you got to say.
Well, I'm just here to answer your questions, basically. I'm on the organizing committee, so I do have all the inside information, and I will share as much as I can without violating any confidences. And the only confidences would be the speakers that we are trying to still get to fill the program. And frankly, to my knowledge, that's only someone to take the sit position at this point. I just encourage everybody to go to the website. And if you haven't already, that website is www.dc911conference.org. And when you go to the website, you will see Dwayne's picture up there. I believe it's on the right at the top. Big deal. And when you scroll down, you'll see the photographs of most of the speakers. But the important thing is the program. So in the text block in the middle, about two or three paragraphs down, there's a link that I think says click here or just here. You click on that for the program, and then also there's another page for the speaker bios. But it's the program that matters, and we are very excited about the program. I don't have it in front of me, but I can remember most of the people. We have 18 speakers and moderators, and it's a very strong program. It's both days, the weekend day, Saturday, Sunday, September 14th and 15th. The really exciting part is, to me, the fact that for the first time ever, the main anniversary period conference worldwide is going to be in Washington, D.C., in the belly of the beast, overlooking the west face of the Pentagon on the 15th top floor of the Pentagon Sheraton in the Pentagon One Room. So when Dwayne and I and the other speakers are speaking, you will see the Pentagon behind our back. And that is, it's in the belly, it's right in the center of the belly button of the belly of the beast. And we're very excited to have the conference there, and we're very excited about the speakers and the topics, which really were worked out finally this Monday, except for the SIP speaker.
Okay. Great. Thanks for that, Barb.
If questions anybody has, let me know. Oh, you should know that early bird tickets are available on the site through PayPal, and they're reduced. $25 per day through, I believe it's August 11th. Could be August 11th or August 16th, but still a couple of weeks. You can get a reduced rate ticket. And as long as if you want to stay at the hotel, which is a good idea, the rooms are $89, which is the reduced rate for the block of rooms that we've gotten. But we only have a certain block of rooms. I think it's 20 or 25. So they're available as long as they last. If somebody wants a room and they've just sold the last one, what you do is you get in touch with Elaine Sullivan, and I can give you her email address, and she will ask the hotel to extend the number of rooms available at special conference block rates.
Great. Okay, so we'll go down the list, continue to go down the stack, and if you have a question specifically for Barb, you can ask her when it's your turn, okay? Ned, you're next.
Yeah, it's just some general information pertaining to the attack on the Pentagon. I guess I had my own opinions like everyone else, but rather than go into that, I highly recommend anyone that's pursuing the attack on the Pentagon and listening to arguments and counter-arguments to consider reading Peter Tiradero's book that was written a few years ago, 9/11 Coup Against America, Pentagon Analysis.
Who's the author? I couldn't hear it.
Peter Tiradero.
Could you spell it? I can't hear the last name.
Yeah, T-I-R-A-D-E-R-A.
Oh, Tiradero, yes. I have that book, yeah.
Yeah. He's an Air Force investigator, crash investigator. I mean, that's what he did professionally for the Air Force, analyzing crashes. But anyway, like I say, rather than go into my own opinions on the thing, I just highly recommend this particular book as a primer before people absorb other arguments into the attack. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. And just to remind others, we're not really here to debate the question. We're just here to look at the conference and to learn about what views are going to be presented.
Okay.
So, James, you're next up.
Well, I just wanted to say that in answer to Duane very briefly that it seems to me that he's outlined just from his remarks tonight, he has outlined a case for the plausibility of the 757 at the Pentagon, but I think you'd still need the forensic evidence in order to have that, you know, be at all convincing. I mean, because it could have been that, and the evidence indicates that that's a possibility, doesn't mean that that's what happened, and that would take the forensic evidence to establish.
Well, if I can just respond briefly.
Mm-hmm.
The forensic evidence has basically all been gathered up by the FBI and hidden from the public.
Yeah. Yes, but the evidence... from our point of view, the absence of evidence does not mean that there was evidence. It just means that it isn't available now.
Barb, what we really want you guys to do is to watch the conference, because Duane and myself and whoever takes the fifth position will each have an hour. And Duane, I'm not sure if you're aware of it yet, but they've also extended the Pentagon session to after lunch to at least an hour's panel discussion with the three of us as well, to take Q's and A's from the audience and from the moderator. So it's 4 hours on the Pentagon, half of the second day on Sunday. And we are hoping to be able to live stream the conference. There will be a DVD, but of course the DVD will be edited and you're only going to get a fragment of what the three of us say about the Pentagon and in the panel discussion. So at a very minimum, I'll keep you guys posted on whether, and we hope, we need funding for it. We're trying to get that from early bird sales. So anybody who wants to go to the conference, be sure and get your early bird ticket. That will help us pay for the live streaming to those of you who can't go.
Yeah, let me just reiterate again that basically Paul had asked Duane to clarify his position, but that wasn't for the sake of putting it out there to be debated tonight. It was just for the sake of making clear what position he was going to be presenting at the conference. We're not into the question here isn't to debate this question. It's just to find out what's going on at the conference. Lorenzo, you're next.
Well, since what I have to say is about this, the only thing I have to go on is the earliest photos that have been available of the strike on the Pentagon, which show absolutely no signs of wreckage. I've put that out there
so
many times.
Well, that's absolutely not true, Lorenzo. You'll have to see my DVD.
Well, I'm talking about the earliest pictures on the day before a lot of the wreckage was apparently had showed up.
Well, that's also not correct, but I will. I will send Ken the link to my DVD Behind the Smoke Curtain,
and
you'll see that evidence yourself.
Yep. Send it to Craig. Send it to Craig Barber, okay?
Okay, send to Craig, okay.
Yeah.
Because say that I'm incorrect does not necessarily mean that the statement that I made is incorrect.
Right.
Yes, but you'll see
that's right. We really don't want to get into a debate here. That's not what this is. This is about looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the conference and helping to clarify the positions that are going to be presented there. I'm sure they'll be adequately debated at the conference, and we don't want to preempt that here. Okay, that's not our point tonight. Okay. Thanks, Lorenzo. Is that all you had? Lorenzo?
Go ahead.
Is that all you had? Okay. Adam Ruff?
Yeah, I'd like to be moved to the end of the stack, please.
To the end of the stack?
Yeah.
Okay. Adam Saeed, you're next.
Hi there. Well, I think, okay, as far as sticking on, staying on topic as far as strengths and weaknesses of the conference, there are several, specifically with regard to the day that's devoted to the Pentagon, I think that some concerns that I definitely know that Craig Ranke of CIT has this concern, and I think several others, myself included on this call, probably have the same concern, is that, you know, in reality, the movement, while it is true that certain people like David Chandler and Richard Gage have loudly and adamantly taken the position that the 757 did hit the Pentagon, by far the vast majority of 9/11 truthers believe that a 757 did not hit the Pentagon, and good evidence of that can be found, for example, if you go to a 9/11 Truth Movement Facebook group that has over 35,000 members, and the poll has been taken there, do you believe a 757 hit the Pentagon, yes or no? And virtually everybody, I mean, there were hundreds of replies, and just about everybody said no. There were a couple of not sures, but this conference, this Pentagon portion of the conference, plays into the notion, which really a rather false notion, that the movement is sort of split down the middle, 50-50 as far as, you know, people believing a plane hit versus didn't. And there are several other concerns that's
could
one
I
major
speak,
concern.
Could I speak to that, please? It's Barb.
No, you can. Wait a minute, Barbara. Let Adam finish his point, and then we'll let you speak briefly to as the conference organizer, okay?
So that's one major concern that me and several other people have, and I think that some of these other concerns can be enumerated by some people that are on the stack, so I should perhaps, in order to move this along and hopefully have a chance of being adjourned in half an hour, maybe I should go on to the next person in the stack.
That's very kind of you. Barb, can you also be very brief, please?
Yes, very, very brief. Well, I appreciate what Adam said, but I really cannot accept it. Craig Ranke we leaned over backwards to try to get Craig Ranke to come, and he declined. So for Craig Ranke to now have a complaint that Craig Ranke is not speaking at the conference is highly strange to me.
I don't think that was his point, Barbara. His point was that it's legitimating the impression that the 9/11 Truth Movement is split in favor of many people taking the more official, something closer to the official version versus a plane did not hit the Pentagon.
I just disagree with that. We were trying to represent all the three major positions that have risen to the surface amongst various researchers and investigators. So, you know, wait until the conference and see what we all say. But we were hoping that Craig Ranke would come. He has declined. And we were actually hoping that Craig McKee would take his place. Craig, have you been asked to take his place?
Yes, I have.
Did you decline also?
I have not given them an answer yet. There were some things that had to happen before I knew what I was going to do, which I could sort of get into that, I guess, when it's my turn or whatever, but I wasn't the only one who was invited.
In the interest of giving everybody a chance to speak.
We want a strong fit position to be able to be rebutted and counter-rebutted. We want to try to get to a consensus, actually, at the conference.
Barbara, how is there going to be rebuttal when they've just changed the formatting so that there's no debate?
Well, the reason for that was Craig Ranke, so we're back in a catch-22. I accepted the debate. I was looking forward to the debate.
I understand that, but wasn't that a permanent change, or was that only a tentative change based on Craig Ranke?
No, it's a permanent. It's a permanent change now. I don't have an input to that. I don't determine the format of the conference. But they decided not to have a debate because there were too many people that they asked who didn't want to have a debate. I was the only person I know of who actually looked forward to it and said yes.
Yeah.
We're not having a debate. However, one more sentence. We are addressing the ability to have back and forth amongst the three of us, whoever the sit position person ends up being, Dwayne, myself, and the sit position person, for a full hour, including Q's and A's and interaction, audience participation, after lunch. We have now added a whole hour after lunch for a total of 4 hours.
So how much of that will be between the parties, the three parties, and how much of it will be audience?
I don't know. That's not for me to determine. That's for the moderator to determine. And I believe the moderator is Lou Wolf.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. The next person on the stack is Paul.
Okay. I have a resolution I'm going to read out, and if I have a second, then I'll speak to it. I'm going to read it slowly. But I have it, and as soon as I finish it, which is not that long, but as soon as I finish it, then I'll transmit it to you, Ken, and to Craig, so that you'll have a record of what I've submitted. But I don't want to do it until I've finished it in case I see a typo along the way or something like that. Whereas George Ripley, an organizer for the D.C. conference to take place on September 10th, 14th and 15th, 2013 in Washington, D.C., that at the last teleconference on June 26, 2013, that a prime purpose of the conference has been to debate the CIT evidence regarding the Pentagon event, whereas Barbara Honegger is scheduled to make a presentation on Saturday afternoon regarding, quote, targeting the Pentagon, quote, and she is currently described for that session, unfairly to others, as, quote, preeminent researcher on the 9/11 Pentagon attack, unquote. Whereas the same Barbara Honegger is currently scheduled as the last speaker regarding the Pentagon event in the Sunday morning session at which Dwayne Dietz and Craig Ranke were also invited, and Dwayne Dietz has accepted participation while Craig Ranke has declined participation, and on July 31st, 2013, provided disturbing reasons that he has not been treated as an equal compared to Barbara Honegger, who is also an organizer of the conference. Be it resolved that the 9/11 Truth Conference the 9/11 DC Conference remove Barbara Honegger from one of the positions that she currently holds as a speaker, and that she be described in the conference literature equally with others, and that the order of speakers for any session discussing the Pentagon event be decided by lot, fairly arranged. Be it further resolved that any stated consensus regarding the Pentagon event that should arise out of the conference should only be promulgated should all speakers, including one for the north of Sitco gas station, be in agreement, and be it further resolved that this resolution be transmitted forthwith by the facilitator of the 9/11 teleconference to George Ripley and Matt Sullivan as two organizers for the D.C. conference. That's it.
Wow, that's quite a mouthful, and I'm not sure that everybody has understood all the particulars in your resolution.
We need to rebut that between now and the next teleconference call when it would be voted on.
Well, that's we don't even know that it's been seconded yet. So is there a second for this resolution?
Yeah,
there,
Barry Zwicker, I will. Sorry, Barbara.
Hold it, Barbara. You're out of order. We have to do this by
a seconder.
Who's seconding it, please?
That's me. That's all I wanted to say. I'm willing to second it.
Who's me?
Barry Zwicker, saying my
Barry,
name.
Barry, thank you. Okay. Well, I didn't hear you, Barry. Okay. So Barry is seconded. All right. Now it can be discussed. Okay. All right, there's a resolution seconded, and it's open for discussion. Who would like to be on the stack to discuss the resolution?
I would, Barbara.
Under ordinary parliamentary procedure, the maker of the motion speaks first.
Well, I need to, okay, that's true. But I need to know who else would like to speak to it. Barbara, who else?
Barry,
who else?
Shelton,
who else?
Adam Ruff,
who else?
Adam Syed,
who else?
Craig McKee,
who else? All right. Shelton, why don't you take about 3 minutes or so to explain in detail, because I think some of the stuff went pretty fast there. It's a big mouthful. I'm not sure personally that it's fair to do this without people having this in writing to look at, because it's such a lengthy proposal, but go ahead and speak to it.
It absolutely is not fair.
Well, you'll have your turn to speak too, Barbara, okay? So go ahead, Shelton.
Well, that's the primary objection.
I'm sorry, Paul.
Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
No, I can reread it again. Ken, you should have it now. Craig, you should have it. I mean, it's possible to transmit it to every single person, I suppose. But I don't, whatever. I mean, I don't think it is that complicated, okay? But let me just point out to some of the, I mean, we know who the organizers are. That's mentioned in the resolution, namely George Ripley and Matt Sullivan, but we also know that Barbara's an organizer. Now, Barbara, she just said it earlier this evening, and she's an organizer. So she's an organizer. She has herself in two sessions, okay? At the last teleconference, she, and I listened to the tape very carefully, she